Ladies and gentlemen, this is the 12th and final round.
Right hand, Golovkin steps in and down he goes again.
Unbelievable.
Mayweather makes him pay. What a rookie mistake.
A sensational left hook by De La Hoya.
It's facts. I'm the best. You know what I mean? Sometimes I don't want to believe it myself, but it's the truth. I'm the best.
I'm going to show you how great I am.
From Southern California, this is the Last Round Podcast.
Welcome back to this week's episode of the Last Round Boxing Podcast. Thank you again for listening. And really quickly, once again, you guys are probably going to hate us for always saying this, but please follow us on Spotify, on subscribe on Apple Podcasts and all your respective podcasting platforms that you listen to us on. It really helps us. It's free. It takes half a second, 1 second, 2 seconds at the most to do. Especially if you're a consistent listener of ours, and you don't have the show within your bookmarks or anything like that, please help us, especially if you listen every week. It definitely helps us in the algorithm. It puts us up the charts. It exposes us to more outlets and eyeballs. And obviously as we grow more and more, the bigger the guests that we can get. So please hit that follow button on Spotify, subscribe on Apple Podcasts, hit rate us 5 stars on there and on Spotify. I think Google Podcasts is gone too, Mike. I think it's gone. I think I read somewhere that it's going away or it's gone. So I don't want to say Google Podcasts, but any of the other ones, please rate us, comment, help us out. It definitely helps us in the show's standing. So jumping straight back into it, fight reviews this past Saturday, the 13th of April from the Manchester Arena in Manchester on DAZN. Zelpha Barrett gets the 10th round TKO over Jordan Gill. Gill was down twice in the 10th round and gets stopped this past Saturday, in Manchester. Mike, what'd you think about Barrett versus Gill?
I thought it was a good fight. I thought Zelpha Barrett looked good. He does always seem to be a little bit hot and cold. You know, if you look at some of his previous performances, you know, he fought, who was it? Was it Eric Donovan back in 2020? He was probably, you know, several rounds down and then manages to, you know, pull it out of the bag. Then he fought Kiko Martinez, probably lost to Kiko Martinez and then got gifted a decision. So he's a kind of a fighter that really blows, you know, hot and cold. But I thought he did a good performance against, you know, Jordan Gill, who'd come back after that superb performance against Michael Conlan. You know, and on to bigger and better things now for Barrett, you know, only 30 years old, highly ranked, I think, in all four, you know, major sanctioning bodies, ranked 18th on BoxRec. So, you know, you're looking at now probably, you know, title shot regime, right? You know, looking at Oscar Valdez, Oshaki Foster, those guys are probably the guys he should be looking at. I was trying to think who would be, a good fight for him. Probably, opinion, the weakest of all of them is probably Lamont Roach. I think Zelpha Barrett.
And he has a title too.
Yeah, and that's what I mean. I think he's probably the weakest of the champions, in my opinion. And I think that would probably be Barrett's best course of action, if he has the chance to go down and luckily pick which one he's going to go for. I think Lamont Roach would probably be his best chance of, you know, earning himself a world title.
And Roach is signed to who? He was with Golden Boy for a while.
Yeah, I don't know if he did. Was it just a one fight thing with PBC or
I'm not sure.
Did they have options? So I think he's either with, I think he's with PBC.
If he's with PBC, obviously that makes it a lot more difficult. But if he's with, well, I don't even know. Yeah. I mean, those are the fights that you mentioned that I think fans want to see, but who's realistic, you know, cause you mentioned Valdez and all those guys. And I mean, they could happen, but is it likely? Probably not. Who's realistic
for him? Joe Cardina.
Yeah, that sounds like a good one.
Someone like that, I think. Or like, you know, if you're still thinking that he needs another fight, someone like a Tevin Farmer. Tevin Farmer still has that name recognition.
When's the last time he fought?
He's been on some of the smaller cards, trying to work his way back up. Because I remember recently I ended up having to search to see, because I know that he fought, and I had to search to find out who it was hard to find. Where was it? Let's have a look. Yeah, March this year, he fought Alan Lucas Castillo, and he won by first round knockout, and he's scheduled to fight May the 24th against the well-known TBA.
PBA.
Because if you look at that Tevin Farmer on BoxRec, he's still ninth. You know, so, you know, he's twice as high up as Barrett. Barrett's sitting at 18th. So if you fight someone like a Tevin Farmer, obviously you've got name recognition, former world champion on the list. So he kind of ticks all of those boxes. Well, you know, whilst maybe he's waiting to fight someone like a, you know, Navarrete, or Shaki Foster, a Valdez, a Joe Cardina, you know, one of those guys, you know, Lamont Roach.
Yeah.
He's still, you know, he's still a name, you know, Tevin Farmer, even though he has kind of been in the wilderness for the last couple of years.
Yeah, but I don't know. I mean, do you think Farmer would take a fight like that? Because he's been very inactive since he lost that title to Jojo Diaz.
I think he would, because if you look at, you know, he lost to Jojo Diaz. And he, dude, that was back in 2020.
Yeah, it was a long time ago.
Ever since then, he's fought Avery Sparrow, Oscar Barajas, and then the Alan Castillo.
So three fights. And
they were all in. He took 3 years off. Came back in June of 2023, then fought in September of 2023. And then fought March of 2024, and then he's scheduled to fight on May the 24th. So if you think about it, I think he would, because of, I don't think he's signed to any major promotion. So I think fighting someone like a Zulfa Barrett would probably be, you're back on the big scene as such. You know, could he kind of overturn the odds and get back into the win column? Because Tevin's probably going to go in as the B side, and it's probably a good payday for him.
I mean, Tevin Farmer's obviously trying to get back in the mix, taking 3 years off and then coming back and fighting essentially every 3 months, every quarter. What, six fights in a 1 year span? Kind of close, right? I mean, you know, at least you got to give him that, regardless, is that he took 3 years off, so now he's trying to catch up. Because he could have came like the PBC fighters that we've seen for years, take 2.5 years off, 2 years off, 18 months, 20 months, come back and then fight once and don't fight again for another 2-3 years. You know?
That's because of those Uncle Al paydays, right?
No, yeah. I mean, can you really, you know, from a financial standpoint, I guess it makes sense.
Come 2 years off, come back, get $2 million. Disappear from the year, come back, get, you know, another million, another 2 million, and then
before taxes.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, I can see that. I think that's a good one in terms of Barrett versus Tevin Farmer. I mean, Tevin Farmer used to be a matchroom guy, right?
One of the original signings, if I remember rightly.
Yeah, I think so. So, you know, maybe Eddie Hearn and Matchroom, they see Farmer kind of building up his resume again and getting some wins under his belt. They kind of say, hey, you want to come back? You know, we'll put you against Barrett, former world champion. You're right. Having that former world champion moniker really does help. It helps. So marketing and, you know, publicity and all that. I can definitely see that. Yeah, I can see that. You never know. You never know. By the end of the year, Barrett versus Tevin Farmer. That makes sense. That makes sense to me. Moving on. Is it Ellie, right? Ellie Scottney? Did I say that right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Ellie Scottney.
Ellie Scottney remains undefeated at 9-0 with a 10-round unanimous decision win over Segpline Lefeberv. That's a hard one. This was for the IBF and WBO super bantamweight titles of the world. Segplane, that's a difficult one. That's one of the most interesting names I've ever seen since we've done this show. Takes the first loss of her career. As I mentioned, she is now 18-1. And Scottney now holds the IBF and WBO super bantamweight titles. What do you think about this matchup?
Pretty one-sided, to be honest with you. I think Ellie Scottney kind of worked out early on that Lefebvre couldn't really hurt her, didn't really have the power to hurt her, and kind of just, you know, started throwing caution to the wind. You know, would have been quite good to have seen, you know, Ellie Scottney try to get the knockout, which, you know, seemed to be few and far between, unfortunately, in women's boxing. But it was a good victory for her. I think she also did pick up the Ring magazine, which I think was presented to her by Ricky Hatton.
You know what? I think I saw some tweets about a friend of the show, and, you know, he's been on a couple times, Tom Gray, who is with Ring magazine, Ring TV. He's been with them for a long time. Usually, I think when there's fights in the UK or in that general area, he's like one of the representatives, especially if he needs to bring the title. I think I saw tweets from him that said that he couldn't make it to the fight. So he had, they were able to coordinate Ricky Hatton to bring his title, to award it to the winner. So I thought that was pretty cool. That was a cool little partnership right there to help out, right? I mean, you know, it's one thing to have one fighter do it, but it's another thing when you have somebody like Ricky Hatton come in and do it. I think that's a pretty big deal, isn't it?
In Manchester, Ricky Hatton's hometown, and obviously, you know, he was adored by the Manchester City fans that followed him home and away. So, you know, I think having Ricky Hatton there presented to him probably just upped the ante a little bit, probably upped the amount of people that were cheering, and the atmosphere in the room, I'm sure, was probably a little bit better because Ricky Hatton was there presenting it to her. But you just got to love Ellie Scottney. It just seems like she's one of those sorts of people that you can't not like. She just seems so nice, so genuine, funny. You know, some of the stuff she posts on Twitter is humorous and, you know, makes us laugh. And, you know, we retweet a few of her things now and again because she's just a funny person. So it was good to see her get the victory. And pardon me, I kind of just feel for her because it's kind of, when she turned pro, she kind of turned pro with a lot of people that were a lot louder than her and maybe a little bit more social media savvy, shall we say, or maybe just wanted the limelight more than her. So she was kind of left on the sidelines a little bit, even though she was probably as talented, if not maybe more talented than some of these fighters. So, you know, hopefully now this is kind of like her breakout moment, and hopefully, you know, she can wrap up most of the titles at this level and, you know, hopefully do like a lot of girls do and move up and down the weights and, you know, pick up a lot more because she definitely is, I think, one of the more talented boxers. She just doesn't do the social media side as much. Maybe she just doesn't want to, or it's not in her character. But, you know, if you've not watched her, just, you know, go watch the fight and, you know, follow her on social media.
Moving on, also this past Saturday from the American Bank Center in Corpus Christi, Texas, South Texas, on ESPN Plus, heavyweight prospect. Would you still consider him a heavyweight prospect, Jared Anderson?
Good question. You know, he'd been in with, you know, Charles Martin, so he was a former world champion.
Maybe he's on the cusp, like he's kind of teetering.
Yeah, it's hard to say, isn't it? You know, like because he's a little bit older. Been in with some big fights, so is he technically a prospect? Yeah, it's hard to say, I guess.
Not yet. Maybe not yet. Jared Anderson remains undefeated at 17-0 with a 10-round unanimous decision win. Excuse me, over Riyad Merhi.
You're struggling today.
Yeah, these are throwing some difficult names at me this week. There was no title on the line for this, no regionals, no nothing. This was just a matchup. This was a pretty unexciting fight. Is that the right word? What'd you think?
Yes, I thought it was was a bit of a boring fight, really. You know, Anderson won pretty easily. I think Riyad just kind of realized too small,
not enough power, and then decided not to really throw and just decided to try to see himself out. I think tried to see out the 10 rounds without getting knocked out by Jared Anderson, which Anderson seemed to struggle to be able to break him down. And then obviously, you know, with all the things that he's had going on outside of the ring, I think that made you kind of look at it. And then also some of the interviews he's done with Roy Jones Jr. and some other people where he kind of like openly admitted that he doesn't really like boxing, just does it because he's pretty good at it, wants to try to get in, make some money and get out. So that does at times make you wonder, like, you know, if he doesn't like it, does he train that hard, you know, because of the fact that he's not really a fan of it. You know, nobody likes doing stuff constantly that they don't like, right?
Right.
You're not going to give it your all. You know, if you can cut corners, you're going to, because you don't really want to be there. And then after this kind of performance, and then obviously when he fought, you know, Charles Martin, he did get buzzed a little bit in that fight as well. It does make you wonder, you know, is he going to fulfill the kind of hype that everyone had gave him? Because obviously, you know, he was in there sparring Tyson Fury, and Tyson Fury, I think, kind of told everybody, like, hey, I'm sparring this really good guy. I think he's going to be a world champion. His name is Jared Anderson. And that's kind of how he kind of broke out, I think, to everybody, because you're like, oh, wow, like he's getting high praise from someone like Tyson Fury. So obviously, you know, he must be good. So everyone kind of jumped on him from that. So I think he needs to get back in as quick as he can and just kind of prove us all wrong, you know, try to kind of prove like, hey, you know, I've got all this kind of stuff going on outside the ring, but I can still do the business inside the ring. Prime example of that is someone like Teofimo Lopez, you know, but just before he fought Josh Taylor, everyone was like, this guy can't handle that. All the craziness going on outside the ring. You know, how is he going to keep himself so calm in the ring? He proved everybody wrong. Everybody wrong. When he fought Josh Taylor, he absolutely wiped the floor with him pretty much. You know, I thought Josh Taylor was going to win going into the fight, and then Teofimo Lopez pretty much stood him on his head. So that's what I think Anderson needs to do, kind of concentrate on that. Probably not tell people constantly that he doesn't like boxing and he wants to retire as early as he can. Probably not the best thing to do. But yeah, I think he's probably taken one or two steps back after this recent performance.
I mean, he's got 15 KOs and 17 wins. You know, I mean, obviously this wasn't a knockout or any type of stoppage. He went the distance, but do we know how old he is?
I've got BoxRec up.
I think he's, what, 24?
Correct. Yeah, 24.
Right? 24. So obviously time is on his side. 17-0 at 24 years old. I think that's a pretty good marking in the sport right now, right? To be 17-0 at 24 years old as a professional boxer right now.
As a heavyweight, he's light years ahead. Really?
Right?
Yeah, 100%. Because if you think about it, most heavyweights don't really come into their own. Obviously, people are probably going to be shouting Mike Tyson.
Mike Tyson.
At the podcast. But he's an anomaly. If you look at everybody else, you know, they don't do it till later in life. Because I think you get bigger, you finish growing, you kind of fill out more. Because obviously, a lot of the heavyweights, they're huge. So, you know, when you're young, you haven't got that man strength and stuff like that. So, you know, most heavyweights are kind of reaching their peak later in life. If you look at the top heavyweights in the division right now, I would say they're pretty much all in the 30s. AJ, Fury, Wilder, they're all in the, you know, in the 30s or deep into the 30s.
Who do you think is not logical, just like the Barrett versus Gill conversation we just had. Realistic opponent for Anderson in the next 6 months. Like we talked about, is he a prospect or is he a contender now? Is he just above a prospect?
I would say to get himself back into the win column and somebody that he could look good against, I think someone like a Kevin Lorena. He was obviously, most of his career was spent at cruiserweight. He moved up to heavyweight, lost to Justice Honey recently, lost to Daniel Dubois, but he also has a couple of wins over Marius Wack, Bogdan Dinu, and then he also beat his opponent, the Riyad Mehri. He beat him by unanimous decision. So I think someone like that, just to get him back into the win column, just because of this performance wasn't great, his performance against Charles Martin wasn't great, so more of a confidence builder. You know, the fact that he's been arrested twice recently is probably not great. You know, so just to kind of...
That was in Detroit, wasn't it? Wasn't it like a police chase or something?
Yeah, he got arrested for a police chase, and then he got arrested for something else silly as well.
It's insane, man.
So
forgot about that.
Yeah, just to get himself back into the win column, you know, get hopefully turn around all of this bad press. Because I'm sure if he goes at home and he's sat by himself, he's thinking to himself, like my whole world's crumbling around me, you know, like I've got arrested twice. That performance wasn't great. Now everyone thinks that, you know, I'm not the prospect that I am. So he's, you know, probably sat there thinking to himself, right, I need to get back out as quick as I can, get into a win column, get a knockout and just turn all of this bad press around. So if I was him, I think someone like a Kevin Lorena, ranked highly, used to be, you know, a really good cruiserweight, a little bit smaller, so someone that he can, you know, probably, you know, dominate and get out of there.
Huh. Yeah, because he's not... So would you hold him from really leveling up, like, significantly?
Yeah.
Until next year?
Yes, just because of what's been going on outside of the ring. Because if you look at Top Rank, they do have a decent selection of heavyweights. You know, the ones we're going to chat about in a second. You know, Efe Ajagba, Guido Viano. You know, decent, you know, people signed to Top Rank that he could face. But just not right now. And like you just touched on, there's no need to rush him. He's got anywhere between... I know, obviously, he said he wants to make his money and retire early, but... Unfortunately, most of the time, you don't make your money in the heavyweight division until later in life. So he's got anywhere between 10 to 15 years left of his career if he's going to do what most heavyweights do. Look, you've got like Derek Chisora, Luis Ortiz, still knocking around. And, you know, Luis Ortiz is about 45, 50.
So I'm glad you, because I completely forgot about that point. I'm glad you brought up his name, Luis Ortiz. So Bob Arum sent out a tweet today, or... the people who control his Twitter account. He authorized the release of the tweet, I'm assuming, saying something along the lines of, like, who's going to fight Jared Anderson next? We have no opponent for him. Nobody wants to step up to the plate. Well, then Luis Ortiz released a video on social media. He was speaking in Spanish, but he was saying, hey, Bob Arum, I'll take on Jared Anderson, let's make the fight. So is that too dangerous if that happens? I mean, if Ortiz, and mind you, Ortiz is historically a PBC fighter as well. We were just talking about, we're talking before we came on air. We're going to touch on it later, but we were talking about PBC fighters, you know, who have been signing with other promoters, just like Boots Ennis, you know, which we'll touch on in a little later in the show. Now, Luis Ortiz is throwing his name out there saying, hey, I'll take on this guy, you know, fighting, seemingly opening the door to fight for another major promoter in Top Rank on another platform, ESPN. What do you think? Too big of a step for Anderson?
Good question.
I think it is. I think that's too big of a step.
I think so, but you just don't know with Luis Ortiz because...
Well, that's exactly why it's too big of a step, because you don't know.
you don't know what he has left because, you know, he gets in there with Charles Martin, Luis Ortiz, back in, what, 2022? And then Charles Martin drops him. And you're thinking like, oh, okay, this is the day that we see Luis Ortiz is done. You know, Father Time's finally caught up with him. This is the time.
But he turns it around,
TKOs Charles Martin. Then he gets in there, loses a 12-round unanimous decision to Andy Ruiz. And then he comes back, gets into the win column January the 13th of this year against a relatively unknown Francisco Cordero. So it's kind of like hard to judge because... Luis Ortiz, it would be a good measuring stick for Anderson because he could afford to take a loss this early in his career because Luis Ortiz is tricky. You're going to get in there, and if you lose, you're going
to... He's a southpaw too.
Yeah, and you're going to learn a lot just due to the fact that Ortiz is tricky, can like old man you, teach you a few things, you know, while you're in there. So, yeah.
I say do it, man.
Nothing really to lose apart from the fact that in boxing, obviously, like once you lose, you're done. You're written off. Right?
I mean, essentially, but
the fans say and stuff like that. You're not. But
look at AJ since he lost to Usyk. How many wins in a row has he had?
Right. Yeah.
You know. I mean, and that's just like a bigger example. I mean, there's others. Look at Tevin Farmer. He's been off for 3 years since he lost to Jojo Diaz in 2020. I think it was in February 2020 in Florida. Lost his title. Takes 3 years off. Comes back and he's about to fight 5 or 6 times in 1 year. So I say go. I say do it. I don't think Top Rank would do it, but
it'd be one way to get back with a bang.
Right. Against Ortiz?
Yeah. To turn around kind of that bad press just to come back and, you know, boom, gets in there and, you know, catches Ortiz and kind of like pretty much retires him. Just boom, knocks
that'd
out.
That'd be a big win and some good marketing for him.
Yeah, big, tremendous.
I would do it.
Got nothing to lose, really. Like you said, he's 24. He's got like another 10 years.
Yeah, I think that's a... Yeah, because I don't look at him as a prospect anymore.
He's done a lot of fights. I mean, 24 for a heavyweight's young, but yeah, when you're looking at like 17, you know, 18 fights soon, I guess not.
Yeah. I mean, hopefully Ortiz did, like I said, he did put out that social media video. So let's see where that leads. We've seen stuff like that before and nothing happens, but we will see. In the co-main event, like you mentioned, Mike, Efe Ajagba, another heavyweight matchup, gets the 20th win of his career, now at 20-1, as he gets the split decision win over Guido Vianello, 12-2-1. Ajagba won by scores of 96-94 twice, and then 94-96 for Vianello. What'd you think about Ajagba's win? And obviously, maybe they're setting up, just like we've seen for years, promoters, they put similar fighters in similar weight classes on the same card. Maybe Ajagba versus Anderson next.
I think they're looking at doing that. You know, I don't know whether next, just due to Anderson's performance not being the one that they thought it would be. But I think all paths do obviously lead to, you know, Ajagba and Anderson eventually fighting each other. Turning the attention to this fight, I thought it was a fun fight. It was back and forth. It looked like Ajagba might have been out of there at the end of the second. But then he kind of fights back and Vianello kind of like had punched himself out a little bit, which gave Ajagba a lot of the middle rounds. And then Vianello kind of like rallied in the last couple of rounds, but it just wasn't, you know, just wasn't enough, unfortunately, on that night. But a really fun back and forth fight. You know, that's what we all like to see instead of just a one-sided like mopping. You know, one's winning, and then the next guy comes back and stuff like that. So it was well matched heavyweight fight, good to watch. And Ajagba obviously picks up another victory. You know, 20-1, moving on slowly but surely. And yeah, maybe by the end of the year, maybe a big fight, two top rank heavyweights, Anderson and Ajagba,
would be makes sense.
Yeah, maybe give Anderson one more fight just to kind of dust off those cobwebs a little bit, and then a big fight at the end of the year.
And also on the card, former Thompson's Boxing prospect Ruben Villa, 22-1, gets the unanimous decision win over 10 rounds against Christian Cruz Chacon, who takes the 7th loss of his professional career. Villa won by scores of 97-93, 98-92 twice. What weight class was this at? Ruben Villa fights at what weight? Is it one? Are we looking like 130?
Feather.
126. Okay. Oh, you know what? I mean, who gave Villa his only loss? Do we know?
It was that giant, wasn't it? Navarrete? Yeah.
It was? Okay.
Yep.
I mean, I could see them building up Villa. I mean, he's been in there with Top Rank for a little bit now. Build him up to put him against Valdez. You know, maybe Burchell. Burchell's trying to make his comeback, right?
Do you know,
I don't know if he's still signed with Top Rank, though.
Ruben Villa holds a victory over a current world champion. Back in 2019, he beat Luis Alberto Lopez over 10 rounds.
Oh, wow. Okay.
At the Omega Center, Corona.
Corona, California, huh?
Thompson's
man,
boxing guard.
That's crazy. I feel, yeah, because like Villa was fighting on the Thompson's boxing cards, which they've held in Corona, California. They've held them in Orange County. They've held them in Ontario, California. They never really had cards in the Los Angeles area, more in than like the surrounding counties. But yeah, Villa was on those cards quite a bit until obviously Top Rank picked him up and signed him. So I could see them, you know, why not put Villa against, you know, Burchell, assuming he's still signed by Top Rank, Valdez, you know, I think it would be fun fights, right?
Yeah, just the problem I think Villa always has and always will have is just his lack of power. Boxes really well, he's good at everything, but I think when you get in with him and you get into that, you know, world championship level, he just lacks that power, you know, to keep you off. You know, I think you get in there and as soon as you realize, like, oh, wow, this guy is like just has no power at all. A lot of fighters, especially, you know, the guys who were kind of like weight bullies like Navarrete, who's huge at the weight, they get in there and they're like, oh, wow, I'm just going to walk this guy down.
Right, right. Yeah, I'm excited to see where Top Rank maneuvers Villa. He just has that one loss, but I think he could still get some decent matchups going forward between 126 and 130 too. So
Robesi Ramirez is a Top Rank guy.
Oh yeah, that's right. That's right. Between 126, 130, they got a pretty good stable right there that they can play around with.
Joet Gonzalez, Top Rank?
Yeah. Yeah. Joet
is another one.
Yeah. Yeah, he's been over there for quite a few fights now ever since he left Golden Boy. Yeah, that'd be another fun fight too. Why not?
Isaac Dogbe?
I don't know if he's still Top Rank. He was for a little bit.
Mm.
But yeah, they got some names to play around with, so I'm excited to see where it goes. Moving on to fight previews. This upcoming Saturday, the 20th of April, from the Barclays Center in Brooklyn, New York, on DAZN Pay-Per-View. Devin Haney, 31-0, goes up against Ryan Garcia, 24-1, for the WBC Super Lightweight Championship of the World. All right, Mike, biggest fight of the weekend. Probably one of the biggest fights of the year in terms of names. Give me your take. What do you got? Who do you got? What are we looking at?
Well, you know, where do we start with the build-up? You know, obviously this fight's been rumored for a while due to the guys going six fights in the amateurs, 3-3. So this is kind of the decider. This is, you know, the seventh one to decide who's the champion, you know, who's the best out of the two. You know, going into it, you would say Devin's probably been in and beaten the more experienced, better caliber of opponents. Ryan's probably biggest fight, probably by far. His biggest fight is obviously Gervonta Davis, which he...
Biggest fight, but not biggest win.
Yeah, you know, I would say obviously his biggest fight, Gervonta Davis. Biggest win, I would still say his recent one over Oscar Duarte.
I know, I think it was Luke Campbell. I think it was Campbell. Campbell's pedigree and the background he had and being an Olympian. You know, people can argue one side or the other, but I still think it was Campbell.
Yeah, and that's probably his best performance overall as well, because when he fought Duarte, he kept doing that odd, weird shoulder roll thing, and then he would dance around and was kind of running for a couple of rounds, where when he fought Campbell, even though he was dropped by Campbell, he seemed a lot more confident, and then, you know, it was a well-hidden, selected body shot, which ended the whole thing.
And I think that was probably his best performance. And I think he should have stayed with Reynoso, to be honest with you. I think that was the best performance we've seen from him, the most disciplined performance we've seen from him. I think being surrounded by Canelo and having probably the Reynoso has been a little bit more strict. I think that it was better for him. We didn't see all of this kind of craziness that's going on.
Oh yeah, he needs discipline for sure. But
yeah,
I think he's like a Broner now, where he's just he has his own personality, and if somebody tries to, you know, hone in that personality in some type of disciplinary form, he's going to push back and he's going to get out of it. But yeah, I think you're right. I think ideally everybody would agree he should have stayed with Canelo's camp, but you know, Ryan, you know, according to Canelo, would show up hours late to the gym, or wouldn't even stay that long. You know, you got to be as disciplined as the guy who's leading that gym, man. Like, that's his gym. You got to do it. But for me, regardless of the buildup that's, you know, Ryan on social media and whatever he's saying, every day it's something different. He's talking about literally, you name it, he's talking about it. Literally. Whether it's sex, religion, politics. You know, I'm serious. Like, you can name any topic, and he's probably talked about it the last several weeks on Twitter/X. So, you know, people are saying, and I can understand it, you know, does it matter for him anymore? You know, is he just looking at it like, oh, as long as I just make it to fight night and I get my check, as soon as that first bell rings, I'm going to get paid. You know, is that it? Is he maybe looking at it like that? I mean, think about how much money he made from the Davis fight. He probably made easily what? 20 to 30 million. I think De La Hoya said in one interview that it was like $30 million. So come into that much money at any age, it's a big deal. It's significant, but he's still a very young guy with a lot to learn. And coming into that much money, coming into that much money really, at least from the outside looking in, really affected his drive. I mean, do you want to say it affected his drive? Because he fought Davis, he lost, he got stopped by Davis, and now he comes back and he fights Duarte. That was a tough fight. He stops Duarte, and then he fights Haney at the division above for the title. I mean, he's obviously trying to produce the big fights, but you know, he's obviously a product of the generation, social media influencer and all that. I'm really surprised that since he's been with Derek James, especially during this fight camp, I'm really surprised that Derek James in that camp down there really hasn't kind of put him into check, you know, because I thought, oh, him going over there, you know, he was with Canelo, and then he went with Joe Goosen. Then he leaves Joe Goosen. He goes with Derek James. Like, you know, you would think Derek James, as I mentioned, would put him into check. Like, oh, you're going to go down there with the likes of Errol Spence, the Charlos, even though the Charlos probably aren't training. And I don't think Spence has been training. And, you know, there's a rumor that Spence isn't with Derek James anymore. I think Ryan even said that, like, on a Twitter spaces or something.
Didn't pay him, supposedly.
Yeah, supposedly. And Ryan, the guy, confirmed something like that, like on a Twitter audio or something like that. So, I don't know, man. I look at it like this. I think we all picked Haney from the beginning. Haney's the more disciplined fighter. Haney's really been trying to like reach these accomplishments as a fighter, as a boxer, you know, in the old fashioned way. He's trying to make the big fights. He has the best resume. He arguably has the best resume in terms of, you know, opponents in the last couple of years between 135 and 140, right? He became undisputed at 135, moved up to 140. He defeats one of the, you know, one of the most feared guys at that division in Regis Prograis, takes his title. He even knocks him down when Haney's not even a known as a knockout or knockdown guy with power, but he moves up a weight division up and you're like, oh, you see something there. You see some pop. So let me ask you this. Then I'll give you my take. Who do you think has more to lose? If Haney loses, is that a bigger deal than if Ryan wins?
Who has more to lose?
Like I mentioned, if Haney wins, people are going to say, well, he's supposed to win. He's the better fighter. I mean, that makes sense. I think we would both agree with that. But if he loses, especially with the way Ryan has been acting, the behavior he's been exhibiting the last several weeks, whether it's promotion for the fight or not, if he loses to Ryan, especially if it's like a knockout, because Ryan, you know, has his speed and the power, that's a huge blow to Haney. That's a huge blow.
Yeah, I would say Haney, because like you say, I think he's going in as a favorite, even though Ryan has a puncher's chance. And Ryan, you know, luckily for him, has this, you know, social media following, which at the minute manages to get him big fights. But, you know, like we've been saying for a while, I think on here, is it's not really showing that having this social media following doesn't necessarily turn into buys, because look at the ticket prices. I think they've dropped the ticket prices like 3 or 4 times. You can get like a floor seat, I think, for this fight for like $200. You know, obviously, I know everyone's going to be shouting at the podcast now, well, you know, Gervonta Davis and Ryan did huge numbers, but that was a huge fight, though, in terms of, you know, Davis is a draw, Ryan's a draw, we think. Going into this one, it's going to be interesting to see what this does on pay-per-view. Obviously, we won't find out because it's through DAZN, but it's not selling out at all. Like, it's done hardly any tickets, and I think they've even taken some tickets. I think they've put, like, isn't it like every other row is on sale to try to like paper it out a bit?
This fight should have never happened in New York, but
no, two West Coast fighters.
Two West Coast fighters, and yeah, both of them aren't big enough. I don't want to say not big enough, but yeah, you know what? They're not large enough attractions to get that attention on another coast like that, especially in New York City. But I mean, I'm assuming that, well, Ryan's more of a SoCal guy, Haney's a Vegas, Bay Area guy. Maybe Vegas wasn't available, you know, the dates that they wanted, or the venues that they wanted, or both.
Too close to Canelo, I think, is what Oscar said.
Yeah, I mean, oh, that's true, yeah. You know, Canelo's a couple weeks away, too, within two weeks or so.
Vegas didn't want to hold two big boxing events that close together, I believe.
Yeah, so, see, I don't understand, like, New York is like just like California with state taxes. You know, they're both pretty, you're going to get taxed. But maybe Haney and his team said, no, we don't want to do it in LA. We want to go neutral somewhere. Well, where else could you go that's neutral? New York. I mean, I think that's how they looked at it. Like, oh, well, we'll both go to New York because it's more of a neutral territory and it's a big market. But you're running into, like you mentioned, like the prices have been dropping. And like, these are facts too. Like, you can go and look and see the prices have been dropping, you know? So, I mean, the Barclays Center is what? 17,000, 18,000 seats? 15 to 18,000? Something like that?
Yeah, around there.
I mean, I don't know. That's, they should have just fought in LA. Honestly, they really should have just fought in LA. I mean, I think Haney was giving too much credit to Ryan, I would think. I think Haney and his team, and we're just speculating here, but if that was the case, I think him and his team are giving too much credit to Ryan and his fan base, especially in LA, that the crowd would be on Ryan's side. I mean, it's possible, but if that was a concern from Haney's camp, I don't think it's as big as they think it was. But maybe there was date conflicts in LA too, with venues, dates. Maybe they didn't want to do it in LA because Canelo's too close and people from LA go to the Vegas fights. So they're like, oh, well, we don't want to do it in LA because then 2 weeks later, people are going to go to Canelo and people are probably going to decide, oh, we'd rather go to Vegas or Canelo instead of Ryan Haney here. So they didn't want to affect ticket sales. That's probably it, honestly. That's probably it. But
Texas?
Look at Haney should outbox him. He should. And obviously, I think Haney's really, he says he wants to knock him out or whatever. I think Haney will try to do that. But Haney is expected to outbox him. Like he said, they fought in the amateurs multiple times. I think they both acknowledged that the first time they fought, Garcia beat Haney, and that Haney wasn't as good because Garcia at that time had a lot more experience at that point. And then Haney kept fighting the amateurs and got a lot better, and they fought again. Then Ryan lost, and they kept going back and forth. And Haney says, according to Haney, that Ryan Garcia, since turning pro, really hasn't changed. He kind of fights the same. And if you kind of compare both of their careers up until this point, I mean, yeah, in terms of money, Garcia probably has out-earned Haney, but in terms of development, skill, you know, notable wins, notable opponents, accomplishments as a fighter, how can you not pick Haney? So, I mean, I'm going Haney unanimous decision in 12 rounds. What do you think?
Yeah, I think because of Ryan's ability, you know, to be, you know, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 rounds down, and then just having that knockout power, you know, having been super, super fast twitch, super fast, super powerful. I think Haney's going to be very cognizant of that. I think he's going to make sure just to get in and out, and not really let Ryan get settled and, you know, not stay in the pocket too long just on the off chance that he does get caught. So I think, yeah, I think Devin's going to play it super safe, stick to his game plan, which he always seems to do very, very well. Yeah, and I think I'm going to, unfortunately, be kind of boring and go for the same as you. I think Devin wins it quite handily, unanimous decision on points.
We've seen some information and heard some information that Ryan is locked into Golden Boy in a contract until about 2026. At the end of that contract, where is Ryan's stock at as a fighter and as an attraction? What do you think?
I think you've got to really move him very tactfully because, you know, this is going to be
important. Well, I think Golden Boy tries that, but then Ryan overpowers him with his social reach. He's complaining, pretty much.
Because I think if I was his manager, right, I think he fights Devin, I think he loses. I think the perfect comeback fight for him is someone like Rowley. Rowley just lost. Ryan's going to be coming off a loss. They have, obviously, the past sparring, which has been, you know, posted several times on social media. Obviously, Rowley's a good shit talker, attracts a lot of attention. Ryan just goes completely crazy now on social media, so that's going to attract a lot of attention. So, you know, that's win-win. That's probably going to do pay-per-view numbers because Rowley's...
You would think that would be a pay-per-view fight? Oh, man, that sucks.
Sadly, yes. Sadly, yes.
Yeah.
Just because of the social media
reach from both fans of people that, you know, they're very love-hate, aren't they, both of them? So I think you would watch, you tune into, you love Ryan or you'll want to see Ryan get knocked out. And exactly the same thing for Rowley. You either love his shit-talking and the brash, crazy stuff that he says, or you can't stand him and you want to see him get knocked out. So I think that that would probably be on pay-per-view, and I think people would tune in, and, you know, that's a good chance for Ryan to get back into the win column. But if he loses that one, then you're looking at what that would be, what, 3 losses in 4 fights, because obviously he has a win over Oscar Duarte kind of sandwiched in between. So I think after that, you know, if Ryan's still wanting to box, I think you're going to have to pick, you know, very carefully, because I think just in terms of ability, he loses to all of the top guys unless he just manages to land that one punch. But he does have that. But with his outside antics and, you know, his lack of training and stuff like that, I just don't think he's going to be able to put that into practice, because he doesn't seem to put the work in behind the scenes.
If Ryan, I'm going back to that point, if Ryan wins, especially if he knocks out Haney, because we talked about this, he's kind of like a little wild, like a mini Wilder, you know, just doesn't really have the boxing skill from a fundamental standpoint, but he just has the speed and the power to end it at any time. Any fighter technically does, but some of them are just more in your face and powerful with it than others. And I think Ryan is one of those. But as long as you can be a smart enough fighter to avoid those shots and avoid those maneuvers, which I think Haney is, just like Tank Davis was, then, you know, you can easily win the fight, you know? So, but if Ryan wins, man, the Golden Boy and De La Hoya are going to be so happy. They're going to be so happy, because not only is it going to be the biggest win of his career, but he's going to be the new WBC, full-fledged world champion. The other ones, interim and everything else, like, none of those don't count. But Ryan has said this week in interviews that the belts don't matter, you know, because now that he's made tens of millions of dollars, you know, I mean, we've talked about this before ad nauseum on the subject, but, you know, and I think Gervonta Davis is the same way, him and his team. You know, it's like, hey, the world title here, the measure of success is attracting business, butts in seats, eyeballs on TV, you know, gates, publicity, the belts don't matter. You know, as a fighter, what do you want? Do you want to be a world champion? Do you want to try to be a world champion and box office as much as you can? Canelo, De La Hoya, you know, Mayweather. I mean, you could. Or do you just want to try to be box office business? I mean, what can you do?
Yeah, it's sad to see, because I do follow, you know, a lot of boxers on Twitter, Facebook and stuff like that. And you see some, you know, John the Iceman Scully, you know, the coach of who's fighting soon, Arthur Beterbiev. He quite often posts on Facebook, like, he'll get like memorabilia signed and stuff like that, and then he'll auction it off. And he gives it to a lot of, you know, retired boxers, and some of them are world champions who didn't earn that much during their career, and they're on, you know, hard times. And he does that, you know, just out of the goodness of his heart. And, you know, he'll send checks to the families and stuff like that. And
that's nuts.
That just makes you think, doesn't it? You know, like, you think, like, you know, some of these fighters are all about the money, and then, you know, okay, like, you kind of look at it like, okay, like, you know, you would imagine most world champions nowadays get paid enough to be able to retire, and hopefully their families are good, and, you know, their kids are good and stuff like that. But I'm sure there are some world champions that, you know, have the talent, but unfortunately aren't a draw and are still going to have to work when they retire, especially some of the fighters in the lower weight divisions, which just aren't as popular as, you know, heavyweights and stuff like that. So, yeah, you touched on something, you know, really poignant right there, is you know, what is success? Is success earning enough money where you don't have to work, your family's comfortable and stuff like that? Or is success, you know, having your name written into the history books forever? But unfortunately, if you're not super popular and you're not selling pay-per-views, that, you know, next in 20 years time, I see you at the gas station when I'm pumping gas and I'm like, isn't that Danny, you know, the world champion from like 10 years ago? Like, what's he doing, you know, working in the gas station? You know, and unfortunately, that's, you know, that's what happens. You know, it's crazy to think.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I wish there was an audit or some type of list of an audit where you could see like how many fighters who at one time or another were a legitimate world champion in the sport and where they are now, like, you know, what are they like? Did they make any type of money? You know, how many? Because, I mean, I'm sure that's a lot of claim to fame. I've met fighters. I'm sure you met fighters, but I've met fighters here in California, you know, guys who were former world champions. And
John Molina.
Who?
John Molina. He's a L.A. County Sheriff.
Yeah, I think he did pretty – I think he did better than we think. I do. I do think he did better than we think. But, yeah, he's now a police officer in Los Angeles. But I think he did better than we think. I think he did okay. Like, I wouldn't categorize him in that conversation.
He's still working. Maybe that's out of choice. But he's still doing essentially a 9-to-5 after fighting on TV for PBC for many years.
No, right. So, I mean, who knows? I view him as not a part of that list, but yeah, like you're right. You can see somebody like at a local gas station or local grocery store and be like, oh, that's so-and-so. Like they were a former world champion. And people think like, oh, you were a former world champion? Oh yeah, you're probably made a lot of money in your day. You know, because especially as casual fans, you think, when you think world champions, you think Mike Tyson, you think Oscar De La Hoya, Muhammad Ali, Canelo Alvarez, Anthony Joshua. You know, you think of all these Tyson Fury, you know, the Klitschko brothers. You think of all Floyd Mayweather. You think of all these big names who come to your mind when you think of world champion. You know, like when you think about people, and it goes back to my point, do you want to be more of a draw business-wise without the belts, if you can navigate like that, or the other side where you try to go for the belts but maybe the business isn't as lucrative, you know, because it's kind of like a retirement. You know, there's no retirement in, I know the state of California, if you, the more you fight of California, they have like a pension, but the pension isn't really that, you know, doesn't have too many years under it and it's not that strong, but it's something. Yeah, that's a tough one, man. I don't know where, for Ryan, going back to the Ryan point, do we have another Adrian Broner on our hands?
Going after this past few weeks, social media antics, and from what his mom, dad, and his brother have posted, unfortunately, I think so, yeah. I think he needs some type of help because it's...
And that. if he loses, you know he's going to blame it on his behavior. So, should we give him enough credit that maybe he might be doing this? All the behavior he's been exhibiting the last several weeks since his fight was announced, regardless of what people think on the opinions, should we give him enough credit on the intelligence side that he's doing it to create that pre-existing excuse? Like, yeah, you know what? I wasn't myself. As you guys can see, I was all over the place talking about this, talking about that. I wasn't focused on fight night, which is why I lost. Do we give him enough credit that that's what's happening? He's building a pre-existing excuse.
No, I don't.
Really? I kind of think he might be, man. I kind of think he might be.
I don't know, because his brother, unless his brother's in on it, you know, his brother posted something on Facebook about, you know, pretty much like, you know, he's not well, stuff like that.
Well, what if they're in on it?
I mean, they could be, you know, to cover his tracks, to try and take away some shade from Devin, because maybe he knows going into the fight, like, hey, Devin's an all-round better fighter than I am and stuff like that. But, dude, some of the stuff that he's posting is just bizarre.
Well, as I said, regardless of your opinion on it, whether it's you...
The fact that people are calling for him to have, like, a mental health check before the fight, like, that's... You know, if he's doing that on purpose and he's taking it, he's gone all in.
No, right. So I'm telling you, man, if he wins, this is huge. There's a lot riding on this, but if Haney loses, I think that's even that impact is a lot stronger. And whoever wins, if the pay-per-views actually are pretty decent, like what's a number, pay-per-view buys wise, that you would consider a success?
Well, what, after seeing the ticket sales, I think it's going to be pretty low. For it to be counted as a success, quiet week, right? The UFC's just had a big card last week, so it's not going up against something like that. Most of the American sports aren't really on. Baseball's just started. Stuff. So there's not much challenge in it. I think if it does 300,000, that would be decent, I think.
I think that's actually really good.
Because
I think 200,000 is actually like a bar that they could hit. Like if it did 200,000, I think that's... I would be more surprised by 200,000.
I was going to go too, but then when it's nothing really challenging it. There's no big sports, no UFC.
No, you're right. You're right. But like, I'm not. They're not. I think it's going to do between like probably like around 150, 175, maybe 150. But I think if it hits 200, I'm not saying it's a ginormous success, but if it hits 2, to me, I think that's, you know, obviously we can't see the business numbers to kind of do the mathematics behind it, but I think 200,000 is actually, because I mean, if you want to compare him to Gervonta Davis, if you want to believe any of those pay-per-view numbers that have been thrown out there, before Ryan, Davis wasn't doing strong numbers either. You know, he was doing between maybe 100 and like 225. Then take those numbers with a grain of salt, because they're just, you know, it's these numbers are just all over the place. And, you know, sometimes they're leaked to specific people because they know they'll run with it. But I mean, think about it.
Maybe I'm just being too generous today. You know,
I think 300 is a huge success. I think 300 is a huge success. That's why I said 200, because I think 300 is like, oh, that's a huge success. If they hit 200, I think that's actually impressive, because my bar is pretty low. My bar is pretty low for the performance of this entire event financially.
You know what? Thinking about it as well, the card is pretty poor. It's really all on the main event.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, they're making the most money.
Yeah.
You know? I mean, and I think, Bill Haney, Devin Haney's dad, said that they did a 55-45 split, 55 for Ryan, 45 for Devin. So if you speculate, what is Ryan making probably? Five million? Maybe less, maybe more.
Yeah, because I don't know. They're probably still going to get paid really well, aren't they? Because Devin.
Oh yeah, yeah. I don't. Yeah, I think. Yeah, I think they're still getting paid very, very well. And I think Devin Haney even said in interviews the last couple of weeks that this is the most money he's ever made.
Yeah, probably somewhere between 5 to 10 then for Ryan, right? And then
yeah, I would think, right? Yeah. Maybe what, seven to eight for Ryan, five for Haney?
Yeah, because it's a lot smaller, isn't it, than the Javonte fight?
Well, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah, I would say, yeah, if you're looking at what he did 30 for Davis, like a third. Yeah, so somewhere around 10, 7, 8, something like that. Because I would say it's probably three times smaller, right, in terms of the amount of the attraction, the amount of eyes on it and stuff like that. So,
and if I was Haney, he wins, which I think we both expect him to.
Mm.
In the ring after the fight, I'd be calling out Davis right away. Even though I don't think they would give him the fight, but not anytime soon. But if I was Haney, I'd call out Davis right away. You know?
Do it. He's got nothing to lose. Everything to gain, right?
Yeah.
The big payday.
Yeah. Why not? Yeah. And then, hey, I mean, with a Haney winning, he's going to be showing that he's, you know, he's got the biggest balls in that whole, those divisions right now, 135, 140. He's doing it. So, I mean, we'll see. We'll see what happens. I don't know if Golden Boy has like an option on Haney's fight or not. I don't think they do, but it's possible that they could have some type of option on a fight next. Like they have a chance to maybe match or beat the offer for his subsequent fight. But I mean, we'll see. We will see. In the co-main event, Arnold Barboza, I think makes this, I believe this is his Golden Boy debut under the Oscar De La Hoya promotion. 29-0 goes up against Sean McComb, 18-1. Barboza was obviously, as of this recording, is still the plan B in case Haney or Garcia can't make it. So as of right now, as of this recording at the beginning of the week, of fight week, it's still on. Devin Haney versus Ryan Garcia. As you get closer, maybe by the time you guys are listening to this, maybe Barboza's in one of those spots. You never know. Let me ask you this. Instead of giving me their take on the fight between Barboza and Sean McComb, by Saturday, what's a percentage chance you put in that Barboza takes Ryan's spot?
To 20%.
I think that's pretty good. I would say 15, right in the middle, 15%. I think Ryan's already proved a lot that he's like made it this far when a couple weeks ago people were like, oh, he's not going to make it.
I know a lot of, then obviously, you know, people in the sport, fighters, ex-fighters were concerned by how Ryan looked. They said he looked kind of heavy and soft. So I don't know whether cutting weight's going to be an issue for him. Just going off what some of the fighters have said, so that could be an issue for him. But we know that we do have what, 5 days to go.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Like by the time our listeners are listening to this, main event could have changed. It could have changed. Happens before. It'll keep happening in any combat sport. That's just the nature of the game. But Barboza making his Golden Boy Promotions debut. So I'm excited to see where he's at, man, because he's already, what, 30, 31, I think, in terms of age, maybe his late 20s, 29-0. He needs to step on the gas here, man, you know, try to get a significant fight. They also have Jose Ramirez, so we'll see. I think he's fighting in Fresno soon, so maybe they're kind of going to put Barboza against Ramirez and maybe Ryan throw him in there or something. See where they all go going forward. Also on the card, John Scrappy Ramirez, 13-0, goes up against David Medallita Jimenez, 15-1 for the interim WBA championship of the world. Is an interim bout. What do you think about Scrappy Ramirez? Do you think he's a real deal?
Good question. I was thinking about that when I was writing the show notes that he was up for a WBA interim. I mean, I've been to a lot of his fights, been ringside for them and stuff like that. He is good to watch. I always think he's kind of like flawed at times because he's kind of always going for that one big shot and stuff like that. And I think he has been lucky that some of the guys he's fought weren't big punchers themselves because he is hittable. But he is a showman. And I think the fact that he, you know, has kind of comes down singing to the ring, always has like good ring attire, stuff like that, must sell a good ticket. I think obviously helps him. And I think that's probably why he, you know, he had some favorable matchups. And it's due to the fact that it's a business and he puts bums in seats. But yeah, I mean, he's good to watch. He's fun to watch. And he's in a lower weight division and he seems to get KOs. So yeah, he's definitely good, good TV fighter. I enjoy watching him. Hard matchup though. Jimenez is no easy matchup.
Right, right. Who is the top ranked kid from Stockton?
Gabriel Flores.
Do you think it's appropriate to compare these two, Scrappy Ramirez and Gabriel Flores, in terms of, you know, they got the personality and stuff, but
Scrappy's better.
Yeah.
Considerably better. Gabe Flores couldn't punch his way out of a wet paper bag.
So you think Scrappy Ramirez has more talent? He can go a little bit further?
Yeah, 100%, 1,000%.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I can see that. Yeah, yeah. Because I think Top Rank gave up on Flores already, right? I don't think he signed there.
Yeah, I mean, I was honest about him and Matt Castro. As soon as he hit the scene, they're just both very...
I mean, Castro's still going.
I'm guessing he must sell tickets because I don't see what they've seen. And I'd say about Gabriel Flores, they're very amateurish. They don't
I mean, they did sign him. They did. He was an Olympian. He was not an Olympian. He was like an amateur champion. So, I mean...
Yeah, multiple time, yeah.
I think it's just an investment. They're going to be like, let's just give it a shot, you know? But yeah, for Flores, I'm pretty sure, I don't think he's signed with Top Rank anymore, right?
They haven't seen him for a bit. I know that his dad and they did a link up with the Vargas brothers and they were kind of like doing stuff together.
Yeah.
So I'm not too sure if there was still with Top Rank or what, but I haven't seen him for quite a while, ever since he, you know, he took a, as soon as he started facing people that had some power and would actually hit back, that's when he came unstuck.
Kind of like Berlanga?
Berlanga a little bit better. You know, I think Castro is similar. Like, they don't like to get hit. And obviously, you're a boxer. It's part of the job. And obviously, when you're in the amateurs, you've got a lot more padding and stuff like that. So obviously, depending on what you're doing, you have like a, you know, a helmet. So, you know, you've got headgear. So... I think they're just too stuck in the amateurs, unfortunately. They just don't have that dog in them, shall we say, to kind of like ride through that. And like Castro's kind of similar. When we watched him in San Diego, I thought, you know, he was lucky to come out with a victory there that night.
Right, right. And then rounding off the card, Charles Conwell, 18-0, goes up against Nathaniel Gallimore, 22-7-1. Is this Conwell's debut with Golden Boy as well?
Yes, sir.
So Barboza and Conwell making their Golden Boy Promotions debut. So, hey, you know, signing some, the last, you know, several months or so, they've signed Barboza, Jose Ramirez, Conwell, some pretty solid fighters. So we'll see if they all pan out, you know, business-wise for Golden Boy. But, you know, everybody was talking about like, oh, they don't have any fighters and they lost Canelo. Slowly but surely, building the stable back up with some pretty accomplished fighters, especially with Jose Ramirez, you know, multiple weight world champion, I think, or multi-time.
The Conwell one, I think, is interesting because he's always been spoken about, you know, with all his talent and stuff, but I've never really watched a Conwell fight where I thought, like, you know, this guy's good. You know, this guy's going to go somewhere. But, you know, maybe we go into Golden Boy. Maybe we're going to see him a little bit more. Maybe we're going to see, he's going to get the regular action that he needs. And, you know, maybe he'll convince us.
Maybe. I mean, new promoter, new network.
Been on the show. Hey, man, Barboza.
Yeah, Barboza and Conway have been on on the last round. So, you know, hopefully we'll get them back on again in the future. News and notes section of this week's episode of the Last Round podcast. Former British and Commonwealth boxing champion Willie LeMond passed away at age 45 this past weekend, I believe, according to his son, Jake. LeMond held the lightweight Commonwealth title between 2006 and 2007. The super lightweight title from 2013 to 2014 and the British super lightweight belt in 2014. He was still boxing in his 40s. and was due to fight on May 3rd, a couple weeks from today. His last fight was in September of last year, 2023, in a loss in the eighth round to fellow Scott. They're both from Scotland, right? Ricky Burns. And also Willie Lamond had previously fought in the mid-2000s, Amir Khan. I believe Amir Khan had released a video saying he just heard about the news, kind of giving his condolences. So, Mike, you're the English guy. Was he, how big was his name across the pond over there?
Yeah, I mean, he was well known. I've fought a lot of big names, like you just mentioned there, Ricky Burns, big multiple-time world champion in the UK, Amir Khan, like you really... around the time when Willie Lamond was fighting Amir Khan, Khan was huge because we'd all fallen in love with him, you know, during the Olympics. You know, he was like 16-year-old kid, if I remember rightly. But I think he was the only person that we managed to qualify because at the time we didn't put many people into boxing in the Olympics. And then kind of went over there by himself, you know, managed to medal, came back home, turned professional not long after. And then, you know, Willie was one of his early fights. So, yeah, I mean, there was a lot of eyes on him then. And, yeah, you know, just kind of like you said, you ran through his accolades and, you know, pretty much everybody came out and on Twitter, Facebook and stuff like that, just talking about, you know, what a nice guy he is. And I think that goes to show for you, you know, the amount of condolences that we've seen over the last couple of days.
Absolutely, absolutely. And then Matchroom with two big signings, very, very significant signings, actually, defecting from the PBC, if you want to say it like that. Jerron Boots Ennis, probably one of the biggest signings in boxing today, has signed a multi-fight deal with Matchroom and Eddie Hearn, and Ennis will reportedly make his first title defense or first debut matchup sometime this summer under the Matchroom banner. And then they've also, I don't know if it's a multi-fight deal, maybe just a one-fight deal, but Deontay Wilder is now working with Matchroom and Eddie Hearn with the fights going to happen again in Saudi Arabia against Jilei Zhang in the five-on-five between Queensberry and Matchroom. So Deontay Wilder, Jerron Boots Ennis, going to Eddie Hearn. I mean... what's going on over there, you know, in terms of Amazon Prime, PBC partnership? Maybe the money's not there as it was with Showtime. You know, if all these fighters are kind of going to these other deals, I mean, something's going on, right?
Unbelievable signing for Matchroom. You know, be interesting to see, you know, how quickly or, you know, if and when he fights Conor Benn. You know, Conor Benn being one of the bigger names for, you know, the UK fans and for Matchroom. So, you know, are they going to put him up against each other? And then obviously as well, you know, today, I don't know if it's just a one fight thing, but, you know, Eddie Hearn also getting another piece of PBC when it announced that Deontay Wilder is going to be on the 5v5 card. So that's another PBC guy that looks like he's strolled over the street to Matchroom.
Right, right. Has Terence Crawford vacated all of his titles?
That's a good question. I don't know if it's officially. I know that there was talk for him moving up to 154, right, to fight, you know, the winner of Zhu and Fundora, but that seemed to have gone quiet real quick.
I mean, I think that's whether, you know, they're all these promoters are hoping, especially now with Eddie Hearn and Matchroom, like, hey, either we try to make a fight with Crawford for you, or he's going to vacate all these major titles and we'll try to grab one of them.
It's just... and we don't know because we're not in the rooms, right, obviously. I do wonder, is it Terence Crawford? Is it his talent? Because why is he not capitalized off that huge win over Errol Spence? You know,
I think it's reasonable to think that, but I also think that contractually, I think he had to wait for Spence. For the rematch. So they were just kind of holding him in limbo. And, you know, for as long as they could. And I think Crawford, like, nobody wants to fight him who's a significant name because he's, you know, he's dangerous. He's a guy. He's the guy, one of the guys in the sport. So I'm sure he's been trying to make fights and it just wasn't working out, you know? But I think a big timeline was the Spence fight, you know, the contractual obligation of a rematch. So that held him up. And I think as soon as probably he could make some type of fight to be his next fight after the biggest win of his career against Spence. I mean, I would think he's been trying to find opponents, so like significant names, but like nobody wants to fight him because he's so dangerous, you know? So, I mean, yeah, I think he's in a tough spot, man. And it's unfortunate to say because he's one of the best fighters in the world, and coming off of Eminem walking him out at the Spence fight, you know, such a career-defining win and performance against somebody like Errol Spence, undisputed for the welterweight championship of the world. You know, it's unfortunate, but like the momentum has, you know, deflated a lot from that. You know, is it his fault? I wouldn't think so if I had to guess, but you know, he's trying to see if he can move to 154, but nobody wants to fight him there. And I don't, you know, 147, I don't know what he's going to do there. I mean, honestly, if I was him, I would go to Golden Boy and say, hey, me and Virgil. And, you know, I think Virgil's coming up, has a fight coming up. So maybe that might not work, but why not? I mean, I don't know where he's going to go. I don't know where he's going to go. He, you know, unless he fights Boots Ennis with Matchroom, Eddie Hearn tries to make that fight. You never know. But yeah, he's lost a lot of momentum. So we'll see where he ends up from there. And then also Sonny Edwards and Adrian Curiel will clash in a 12-round flyweight battle as the chief support bout for the blockbuster world title clash between Juan Francisco Estrada and Jesse Bam Rodriguez in Phoenix, Arizona on June 29th on DAZN. So DAZN, Eddie Hearn, Matchroom, making a lot of moves over there, making a lot of moves. So once again, guys, thank you guys for listening to this week's episode of the Last Round Podcast. Please don't forget to follow us on the Spotify app. Subscribe on Apple Podcasts, rate us 5 stars on both, on any of your respective platforms, but primarily Spotify and Apple. Please help us out. It really helps the show, and it's free. And it's free. But before we sign off, once again, Mike, go ahead and let them know where they can find us and follow us.
At The Last Round 12 on Instagram and Twitter, and be sure to join us next week. It's going to have to be a guest. Nothing really to preview for the weekend of the 27th.
We tried to get some guests this week too, but we just couldn't, you know, get some yeses here. So it's not that we haven't tried to get some guests on the show to our listeners here. We've been trying, but sometimes the schedules don't align with them, or we don't get any responses, or you know, it just doesn't work out. So, but we've been trying. We've been trying to get some newer guests, some bigger guests. So we have some talks ongoing with some people, so hopefully we can schedule them in. But we're trying to throw them into the lineup here. But sometimes it's a little difficult with some scheduling conflicts and all that. But we appreciate you guys listening once again to this week's episode of the Last Round Podcast. We'll be back next week to review, like you said, the Ryan Garcia fight and Devin Haney. So for once again, for my co-host Michael Shepard, I'm Danny Z. This is The Last Round.
Thanks for supporting and listening to the show. Follow us at The Last Round 12 on social media. Rate, review, and subscribe. This is The Last Round Podcast.